The next case is 9638 et al., Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company versus Lake County Board of Revision. Justice Cook is not participating in this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Cook, Judge Claire Dickinson, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 9th District. Welcome, Judge Dickinson. Mr. Weaver.
Than it was in the Stan Jim case?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
How does that differ? Because that's important.
Okay.
Maybe it's better.
Well, actually, we have a ton of one of the three for the core quality, and we'll get another three types and get a copy to our proposing council last week. The green area was highlighted on the information was provided by the taxpayer here in Stan. The rest is the reason why I had highlighted sort of blend all together. The non-highlighted portion of this amount of exhibit is the actual form.
I saw those, but I had trouble trying to correlate them.
I agree. That's why I anticipated that when I made those prepared,
yes.
The standard form must have given the name, county, etc. The standard and the court focus on did not answer any of these questions at all. Simply refused to, for whatever reason, answer those questions whatsoever. Now, this complaint form has been revised. You can see in tab 1 or something. And the present form, your body, changed the precise nature of the question. But when the body of questions 9, 10, and 11,
before we get into the difference between reasons and facts?
Yes, sir. The expansion of the complaint form did not contain any reference to reasons at all. First of all, we were 7.15.13 talks about facts and not reasons. Mm-hmm. So what the court expansion did was to say this complaint form is reported now. Satisfying the minimal jurisdictional requirements of 5715.13, the problem is that the taxpayer didn't begin to fill the form. So while the court upheld the complaint form, the information requested, the taxpayer lost the simply failed to respond at all. In the case before us, the taxpayer did in fact respond to the
your case.
Questions 9, 10, 11 are all the information which was sought under the pertinent tax section, section of the statute of complaint. For example, was the property sold within the last 3 years? In this case, it was not. Question 11, had it been listed for sale in the last 3 years? The question was not. Another obvious question, was the property that was sold or listed, you get some kind of idea as to what the value of the property might be. And the final question was, deals with whether improvements have been made in the property in the last 3 years. In our case, we indicate this, that a low-level radioactive waste facility has been added to the security of the property.
Did you ever have any notice at any time prior to hearing that the forms were allegedly defective?
No, sir. Other than the one of the notice we got was the appellants, the appellees in this case, did file motions to dismiss. However, the Board of Revision gave us no notice whatsoever that they were going to consider this at the hearing that they read the motions. And in fact, this is tantamount to a dismissal of prejudice.
Did you not respond to the motion?
Yes, Your Honor, we did. But again, if you analogize some of the superior civil side in the county police court, where a court is going to rule on a motion to dismiss and treat as final on a complaint, for example, for the sued DP of America and not DP Anger. So my final motion to dismiss because we didn't have a technical proper corporate name. No court, no court should dismiss in that case with prejudice about the rights of men sitting in the top corporate party. I'm sure a court did that. This court determines the first court of the court of the court of the
What do you seek? I mean, excuse me, go ahead, sir.
Well, if it's jurisdictional, though,
yeah.
It's clearly going to be with prejudice.
It is jurisdictional.
And both sides seem to be treating it as jurisdictional.
Well, what's jurisdictional is important. And there are four questions under the jurisdiction. Question 7, question 9, question 10, question 11. Those are the only jurisdictional questions on this complaint form. And this court has already predetermined in the standing case. And we have met those jurisdictional requirements. The problem with the Board of Tax Appeals' decision is that it read question 8, reasons to make facts.
I understand that this court in Stanton treated it as jurisdictional, and both parties here are treating it as jurisdictional, but I'm a little concerned about that. If it's jurisdictional, that means it could be raised at any time, even by a collateral attack, doesn't it?
It does mean, yes.
Is this the type of thing that is normally jurisdictional?
Well, no. As our case was pointed out in the brief, quite frankly, what happens as a matter of practice is the taxpayers, this court has announced a policy that's really these matters are to be heard on the merits. And the bare minimum notice that provided by this complaint form is all that is required to satisfy the statute. We have a case, for example, where a taxpayer didn't put any amount in for a claim decrease, but attached a letter which indicated that a recent sale of property sold at the next price. And the court said that you can do a reverse mathematics, if you will, and determine what the taxpayer meant. The court fact is, even though 5715.13 requires that the complaint be verified, and the Act of Standard case was then.
I read all that brief. If you just bear with me for one moment, drive this into the ground. But if this is not a jurisdictional question, then what would it be?
It was not a jurisdictional question.
If the failure to let's assume that you did not do on this form what you needed to do,
okay.
And if that failure is not jurisdictional, then what would it be?
Well, I under the case law, not by the court, the four questions that we're talking about are jurisdictional.
I understand that. I'm asking you to bear with me for a minute and consider that it's not jurisdictional.
Not jurisdictional.
Would it then be analogous to a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim.
Oh, I guess if it's not jurisdictional, it'd be analogous to the 5-5-5-8 events, you know, somebody was to DP America, or service wasn't proper, or didn't serve a statutory agent, we filed a motion to dismiss, and that shouldn't be on America. Obviously, something can easily rectify.
We pursued this term.
Counsel, tell me why the responses to 7 and 8, unknown at present, and to be determined, are so different than the statement stanchion, all other pertinent data substantiating this complaint or evaluation will be presented as requested here. First of all, why are those answers in our case here so different than in the Stanton case that it would Stanton wouldn't control?
Well, Stanton should control. We are not advocating that Stanton be overruled.
Okay.
This is our position that the Board of Tax Appeals would properly apply the Stanton standards to the
But aren't they similar to the reasons Stanton was decided?
No, because it's important.
They seem to come down on 7 and 8, the answers there, as being similar to or almost the same as the Stanton case.
Paragraph 8 of the public standard, this is not a jurisdictional question. Question 7 is, and as indicated here, there's a decrease of $50,000 at least.
How about unknown at present?
I'm sorry?
How about unknown at present? That doesn't count?
No, quite frankly, Your Honor, I was just responding to what Justice Dickinson's comment. The BCA has held that if it can be gleaned from any source on the complaint form or transcript complaint form what these numbers might be, then there's no requirement to assess them. And we can do that. In this case, for example, we say a decrease of at least $50,000. Fill in box B, we would then deduct $50,000 from $46,328,610.
Well, are you saying if you answer box D, you don't have to answer A and B? Is that it?
I'm saying that, yes, sir, the Board of Tax Appeals has held when these numbers in box A and B can be determined with reference to numbers in C, D, or attached to this complaint form, these don't have to necessarily be answered.
So you're saying that in answer to the allegations that we answer A and B when we answer D?
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, if I could just briefly spell the word, it was indicating, subtract 50,000, 46,328,610, so we get 46,278,610 box B, then you divide this. That number by 135% total value, and you determine that $132,224,600 will be the true value of the
bill. Okay. Seems simple.
Yes.
Why wasn't it done at the time? The answers you're giving me for the blanks now seem to be easily determined. And why did you put in unknown and present?
I don't know. Probably because in any case, they're public reasons. First of all, when the appraisal of this property was done, and it took about, I guess, 9 months or so, or 10 months in 19.
Were those answers put on there at different times?
The one that escaped?
Yeah.
No, sir.
So you had, when you filled out the form, when they filled out the form, they had that information in front of them, right? The same information you just used in filling in A and B. The simple question is, if you could do it so easily here now, why wasn't it done when they filled out the form?
I think the reason it wasn't done was, this is indicated in box D, it says at least $50,000.
Ah, that's an unknown.
Well,
is that a guess?
No, it's not a guess. There are a couple of problems that work here. One, notwithstanding the fact that the county had obtained an appraisal to this property, and it's been, that I have obtained information from taxpayers in this case over 10 months.
So what are you saying? You don't have any real simple answer why it wasn't told in at the time and submitted like that, right?
That's true.
It should have been, right?
I'm not sure. We didn't, the taxpayers did not have a copy of the appraisal that was done by the county. They'd asked for it immediately while receiving the tax bill. They did not receive it by March 31st when the complaint form had to be filed, and therefore they were handicapped. They could not obtain their own appraisal because in that short period of time, this is an enormously complex piece of property. The fact is, the taxpayers asked for a continuance of the hearing date.
But you didn't use any additional information to give me the answers here today. You used the information that appears on the form.
That's true.
I'm just saying, I'm maybe missing the point, but I just wondered why it wasn't done in the filed form.
The point blank answer, that's not on us.
Okay.
Well, I thought you answered it. You said that in your brief, I thought you did. You said you didn't get the information. You asked for the appraisal and they never gave it to you.
Yes,
now, short of filing a lawsuit, figuring out some way of discovery, is there any way you could get that appraisal?
No.
So you just didn't have the full information at the time?
That's correct.
Well, you could get your own appraisal. And your point, because it says the complainant's opinion of true value, which suggests that since it's the complainant asking for some relief, that the complainant would have an idea. I think that's maybe Justice Sweeney's getting to that. Why wouldn't the taxpayer know to have some idea of what the fair market value is, and couldn't they get an appraisal? And I think your answer to that is there wasn't time.
Yes,
between the
assessment. This is the most complex piece of property in the state of Ohio. Eight different parcels. The county was out of the plan. Seeking information to do an appraisal starting in February of 1994. We cooperated with them, provided all the information the appraiser needed to come to a determination from February of 1994 through the end of 1994. Without knowing what the methodology was that the appraiser used, the basis for it, we had no idea. We had to file a complaint by the March 31st deadline. We began attempting to retain an appraiser to conduct appraisal work. The fact is, we asked in June of 1995 for a continuance of the hearing for the Board of Revision because we didn't have enough time to get the appraiser done. That motion was granted. Everybody did want to ask. And then 2 weeks after granting that motion, we turned around without notice and dismissed the complaint with prejudice.
Whatever figure you put on there, say you just gave an opinion and put it on, would you be bound by that figure at the hearing?
No, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, this court in the Jones and Lawson appeal case, which this court has decided to rule in the case of Lucas County, as a matter of fact, that in that case, the deal with the court, so our court found at least that the Board of Revision for any person who is responsible for determining the valuation of property has an obligation to determine the real valuation of property. In that situation, the property owner put a figure that the court found after a hearing was higher than the court's basis for all the assessments, but said it was bound by the figure put out by the taxpayer. This court said no. The obligation is to find the true value. True value is lower than what even the taxpayer is seeking. You have an obligation to do it. And this court held, for example, this DTE form is not even a complaint. And the court went on to say, even if it were a complaint, that Civil Rule 15 would certainly allow for this amendment to inform the evidence for an amendment to change the prayer. The key point for Oxy on that in terms of the amount is any amount over $17,500 has a triggering effect, and that is that any decrease over that amount, school districts and other interested parties are entitled to notice that a property owner is seeking a decrease. decrease in evaluation. That's the key. That's really the purpose of this, to put everyone on notice. And that was done.
If I can understand the scenario, you have these auditors or these appraisers out there for February or whatever doing their appraisal. You knew that they were in the process of putting up appraisals together.
Yes, sir.
But did you have any advance warning of what that change in the tax bill was going to be before you actually got the tax bill?
No, Your Honor.
So from the day you got the tax bill, is there a time limit in which you have to file to present the tax bill?
That's correct. Yes, there's March 30th, 3 months we have to file on March 31st, 1995.
And about how much would it cost you to appraise it on this large piece of property?
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
So there was no point in you doing your own appraisal knowing they're getting theirs until you saw that your tax bill actually changed more than you thought it should.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So you were waiting until they did their job, see if you needed to get an appraisal. And they seem to argue in their brief that, boy, you had all this money, you should have gone out and gotten your appraisal. But I'm trying to determine what reason would you have had to get your appraisal when you knew whether you were going up or down, or whether you thought their appraisal was fair.
Well, that's precisely the point. We sit down and analyze and interpret the report. Was the report appropriate? Did we do the proper analysis? Did we incorporate all the information it should have been?
Did it substantially raise your tax bill?
Yes, by 7%. On property that has a 40-year license to operate this facility from the NRC, is only a 40-year license. 4 years. So one would expect, logically, that the tax valuation would decrease over a period of time instead of a 7% increase, which included, so we finally got the copy of the appraisal report, one month after the claim was filed, included property that was tax exempt.
Thank you, Mr. Weaver. Do you have a question?
But just on that last point, although that's really not central to the argument, the 40-year life, I assume there are similar plants out there that are approaching that level of life already, and I guess I also assume that a 40-year license doesn't necessarily mean that the lifetime may not extend far beyond that. Appropriate modifications, repairs, updating.
There are plans, not only by the taxpayers in this case, sometimes I'm sure the person who took our plans online is probably our approaching in 4 years. What their status is, I don't know. I do know that we've spent appreciably more than 4 years.
Thank you, Mr. Weaver. Mr. Brown.
Yes
or no? Well, all that they did was they took the figures that they had from prior
5 or 7% in every one of those figures. The 7% figure comes from the average industrial increase in down in Lake County. So all it was the overall blanket percentage slapped on top of the entire Perry plant, and as well as the East Lake coal plant, which is also part of this.
You're claiming this is part of a settlement agreement that they did with?
Not that they added exactly 7%, but the parties had agreed on the original $325 million to use that as a stepping stone for future value increases. It went from $325 to about $350 to about $370, and that's where we're at today, $375. So it jumps into each time it's reappraised. It's more computer reappraising than an actual go out there and start counting how many toilets there are and figure out how much is allocated.
So is it your position that the group should have known that they were going to do a jump in their tax bill to 7%?
Not that they would have known 7%, they should have known they were going to do a jump. And the fact is that this is five very large utilities. We're not dealing with the average taxpayer who wants to come in and put their taxes on the house. We're talking about a monopoly of electricity that was stretched from the Ohio border all the way to.
What was the basis of that 7% increase again? What did you base that on?
The auditor took the average industrial increase over the county and applied that to
increase an appraisal of other?
An increase in value.
In value,
right.
That's what I mean.
And as my learned colleague has testified, it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to have these things appraised. So rather than to do
how
that,
often do you have them actually appraised?
The last time we did, typically it's every 6 years. The last time we looked at our plant was appraised in 1988.
So in this case, you would say it cost hundreds of thousands to do an appraisal. You claim you didn't do one. You just took value A and added 7% based on some standards. So that if the taxpayer got this bill and said, hey, I don't agree with this 7%, we've got this lease that's terminating, we ought to be going down in value, are you willing to concede that then it would take them a long time to do their own appraisal?
No. If they have a number of readily available numbers, number one, they know what it costs to build this. We don't. We have asked in other appeals generating this one for cost figures. They have them all in a series of boxes. They provide certainly an annual report, which is what their plan is worth of depreciation. They have made a number of PU sales filings for rate increases now. They're trying to do a merger right now. Certainly they've got their asset value for that. It's their asset. This is the asset of five very large public utilities. If they don't know what's at work, what it's worth, of county. Their asset. Who better to know what that thing is worth? That's the crux of it.
Council, a couple of themes here sort of going in opposite directions. For state tax purposes, do with the reconstruction costs new. Whack it down 50%, take it down gradually from there. I mean, isn't the way the state taxes based on an assumption that the minute you open the doors, it's out of date, and then you depreciate it from there, that it's losing value all the time?
That's correct. The cost basis value, there's a
depreciation. Okay, so here you have, from a real estate standpoint, an approach that assumes an automatic sort of inflationary increase of industrial property applied to a specialized piece of property that another arm of the government, state government, which local government is really a subsection, operates on a whole other set of assumptions. Isn't that an incongruity that sort of cries out for specialized work on the part of the assessing authority
that
as well as the taxpayer?
That may be. Lake County's not a very large size of the small city.
before you, I wanted to make sure I understand correctly a couple of things. One, were the other industrial sites in Lake County actually appraised, or was there an automatic 7% increase imposed upon them as well?
I think it's a mixture.
So some were appraised, and he came up with an average, and you imposed it on the others.
Right, right. Okay. Like you said, the other property in this case is the East Lake Light Plant, coal-fired plant. That had the same 7%.
Okay. And you're not contending, are you, that because of this settlement that you mentioned that took place in 80-something, that they were foreclosed from the type of challenge that they made?
Oh, no.
Okay.
They're not.
I didn't think so. And then,
And that's exactly the point why they need the numbers that they didn't put on there.
Right.
If those numbers came in and said, we would like to argue about a 7% increase, well, the auditor is going to look at that a certain way. They're going to make determinations as to whether or not they want to spend a couple $100,000 on an appraisal. Chances are they're probably not going to want to throw away that much money on something that results in taxes that don't justify it. Whereas if CTI comes back like they did this for the next year and says that $375 million plant is now worth $61 million, you can definitely spend that money and go out and get it. The problem is the BOR is a one-time hearing. We have only one shot for that, and they've got to have the information. The auditor has to do the investigation.
Well, what is so terrible about, as I think it's narrow, you take a figure as a settled figure, you add this 7% without doing an appraisal, and say that should be tax rate. They now want to contest that, they file a complaint. Everyone seems to concede this is an enormously complex property, and I think Justice Piper's point is, well, okay, we can't take automatic evaluation for other purposes and say that's what's real estate value. So don't you have a right to go out and get an appraisal, and can't you guys just give them a continuous and let them get those figures, and then you go start doing this whole process, and you can then make those determinations instead of saying, oh, we don't know what it is, too late, out of here. And that seems like a very harsh remedy for a very unique, complex situation.
Well, and in a perfect world, that may be true. The problem, I think, with that is that without any information on the DGE-1, that prohibits us from even knowing where to start on the case.
We didn't have to start until they got their appraisal, so they knew where they had to start. Well, they got your appraisal, whatever you want to call it, so they knew where you were coming from.
Well, in one case, you're arguing the effect of the largest piece of property in Ohio and trying to extend all the case law, which a decision of this magnitude would.
Did your board, have discretion to give a continuance to get this information?
Oh, sure we did.
But you chose not to exercise it?
No, they granted a continuance motion to come in from Mr. Petkovic to dismiss the case based upon what we're here on today. The board allowed CEI to file their response to the class utilities. They filed that response, and then I think a few weeks later, the board issued the ruling.
What is the continuance for that the other side mentioned, so we mentioned?
I think it was to go out and get it.
So they granted right to get a continuance, but they don't, but they didn't allow it in the same process.
Well, the problem is that there's no information in the form to let the board know where to go.
Let me ask if the reason was that when the board granted the continuance, it didn't realize or it forgot or whatever that line seven is jurisdictional, and that maybe Mr. Petkovic reminded them that it is. That would happen?
That's correct. That's correct. And that's the issue of jurisdiction. I mean, we could look at the decision in this case potentially impact all the DTE cases that come in.
Let me ask you a factual question. Did the taxpayers here today in this agreement, the settlement back in 88, I guess it was, when they settled on the value of their property, did they agree on what standard would be used or what source would be used to determine what the increase would be each 6 years?
The only thing that was really agreed upon, it wasn't in writing, or tax provisions allow stipulation for future year, but the agreement basically was that we used 325 as a starting point. There was no
agreement that you'd use this industrial standard.
No.
Well, if I guess all these questions, sir, I mean, if this is jurisdictional, then how much, you haven't argued this, but if it's a jurisdictional issue, if seven is jurisdictional, how much discretion does the board have to grant a continuance? You haven't argued here today. I just wondered, you apparently think they do have some discretion. Now that it's been raised, how much discretion do you think your client has to grant a continuance? Don't we have to decide that? I mean, if it's equity, if there's an equitable issue here, then that's one thing. But if it's jurisdictional, then we have to decide even under the time burdens here and all the burdens we've heard about, whether if it's jurisdictional, it's jurisdictional. Isn't that
basically that's correct? I mean, you know, it's the request for an extension may have come in. I don't remember if it was prior to or after the issue that was raised, but I do know that the board did not stand down formally to work out whether or not they were going to raise the issue floating out there as well as the jurisdiction. And they wanted to give CBI the chance to respond to it without just going ahead and making a ruling. And in Stanton and Grip, courts didn't do that. They just so spont, they dismissed the case. The DOR, there was no provision for any hearing. Here, our board revision, like that said, farther we gave them the ability to argue. I think,
Counselor, if this is jurisdictional and it had not been raised and if there had been a hearing on the merits, that hearing had resulted in, because of the school board's complaint, the taxable value being raised above what the auditor had originally placed on it, could the utilities then come in and say, wait a minute, this is jurisdictional, we didn't properly fill out our complaint, that raises nothing.
I'm sorry, that raises.
We're back to the question of, if it's jurisdictional, whatever would have been the result, if it had gone forward, a decision made on the merits that increased the taxable value above what the auditor had placed on it, then wouldn't the electric company be in the position of being able to argue that that increase is no good because the board never had jurisdiction? Okay, we don't follow it, that's fine.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Petkovic.
I don't think the court has been given an entirely complete exponent of what we have in the court this morning. We've had examples of standard complaints, and if you go look at standard complaint, the claim of value on which they were seeking redress is M standard. They're asking for $25,000 reduction. I would urge the court to follow Stanjum, at least the theory of Stanjum is contained in page, I believe it's 135 in Stanjum. The court says, the Board of Tax Appeals has read the above quoted statutory language to mean that when a decrease in property valuation is sought, a party must state the valuation complaint and must affirm facts under oath to support his requested decrease. And then the court went on to say, with that interpretation, we have no quarrel. What we have here, whether this is the largest building in the world, whether it's the Taj Mahal, or whether it's the most humble household that exists on any permanent parcel number in the state of Ohio, the rules have to be equal, there has to be unanimity among the treatment of all taxpayers. Now, we have a situation where a complaint was filed in 1995 that's related back to the tax year 1994. Tax and date January 1. This organizational entity, monolithic as it is, comprised of some of the largest monopolies in Ohio, as Mr. Brown indicated, had resources available to know what their properties were. They built it, they filed applications, they went to financial institutions, they filed annual reports to stockholders. They saw federal income tax returns where they take a certain quantum of depreciation over a value or whatever. There was some finite number they could have used.
corporate accounts to the court. Why it won't work? In 1984, there was a case, New Corp versus Board of Revision, I think it's cited in, or reported in volume 64, that I think seconds. In that particular case, this court dealt with the question of what is a jurisdictional requirement and what is a procedural requirement. And they found no efficacy to certain requests of things in that complaint form. And if you look at the complaint form, in this case, the supposed one is tangent. The complaint form in this case is promulgated by the Department of Taxation. It has 12 questions. Over 50% of these questions can be answered. Don't know. There's even a box there where you can put that note. You don't have to write.
Counsel, what possible reason would they have, if they have all these figures that you say they have, what possible reason would they use unknown at present? If they know, they can put in any figure they want there, and they'll comply with the requirements. Why would they leave it on blank?
And that's one of the reasons why their interpretation of 5715 doesn't work. If you look at the statute, especially Section E, and it talks about people who can file complaints with the Board of Revision, you've got any person owning taxable property in the county or a taxing district within the territory of the county, the Board of County Commissioners, the prosecuting attorney or treasurer of the county, the Board of Council of Trustees of any township within the territory within the county, the Board of Education of any school district within any territory of the county, the mayor's legislative authority of any municipal corporation within any territory.
So
of the
what
county.
You're saying is you don't have an answer, is that right?
Well, my answer is they could have put a number in. I'm sure they had a number.
Why didn't they?
Well, you don't file a lawsuit, in my humble opinion, until you find out what the problem is. There is one procedure in the civil rules where you can file a lawsuit for the purpose of discovering if I have a problem, but this is not one of them.
So they were playing the game? Is that what they were doing? Trying to fill in the blanks when it's best suited them?
If the numbers are large enough, and if the problem is arduous enough for somebody else to handle, I think that in our modern legal society, that you can bring someone to their knees. You can force a settlement on somebody by such overwhelming strength.
Well, counsel, if that's the case, why not just put in a low number, scare the Jesus out of you, and show up with a big stack of documents and somebody looking like he's an appraiser, and say, well, can we settle? We'll take just 10% of what we ask for. I mean, we have notice pleadings in all other areas of the state, a personal injury case, who knows what it's worth. So we got away from trying to specify because that was a legal fiction. And it would seem to me, to the extent you can find people who appraise this kind of property at all, you can engage in all kinds of theories as to whether this property is worth less than it costs to build or whether it's worth a lot more because it's licensed and you can't build this kind of property anymore. And one might assume that the license is going to go on in perpetuity, even though it's... you can make all kinds of assumptions to run those numbers up and down.
And answer that specific question, that's in a way exactly what happened. It's in the second year, and there are now 8 or 9 appeals for the second year of the same triennial, and this court has visited that particular question several times. I was one of the several cases decided on that.
So, and your time is running out.
What happened here is that's exactly what they did. They filed a tender payment, and if you look at the subsection H, 5715-19, it talks about a tender of payment. You can pay less than the full taxes charged, but that difference in charge and paying the tender of payment is predicated, as the statute says, on the claim valuation that's set forth in the complaint. And I would urge you to look at that and understand you have to give your number.
Thank you, Mr. Petrovic. Mr. Weaver, you've used your time, but you may start with 30 seconds. Mr. Weaver, let me ask you, it does seem to me that maybe I'm just naive, but it just seemed to me that all these utility companies would have someplace in their records have the ability to pull together an amount of the value of their property. It just seems like somewhere you have to have, I mean, they have to have those records for other purposes, and it would seem to me to fill in blanks when there's so much at stake here that unknown at present could so easily be, maybe not easily, but in 3 months I would think they could get together a figure that would at least be a legitimate, not guess, but legitimate best effort at an amount. I mean, it's difficult to believe that they wouldn't have the ability to do this for me. To me, what am I missing here?
You're missing the fact that the cost of the property, just as Michael pointed out, is completely different from what the value of these things. You don't have comparable sales in nuclear power plants. These properties are unique properties. It takes special expertise to go out and value. We don't have appraisers on staff to know what these values
are. Okay, but do they not have... Have they not had to do that for the PUCO, for example, or for some other purpose? Just, no?
A couple of things that I've heard at the time. I would please look at tab one of the supplement to our narrative, which is the exemplary complaint form here. It's important to note on page two, these are the board provisions, all the rules, on page two. They say it has to be submitted at the hearing. Physical data, description of the improvements to the property, including age, construction site, etc., any changes in the property. And then they go on to say, they're going to provide this information. It's not jurisdictional. It'll hurt your chances to use it at a subsequent hearing. There are all local rules that they apply. Rule 1.09C says a party intending to introduce evidence involving expert opinion shall file with the Board of Physician a summary of that opinion and a summary of the expert's qualifications no less than 5 days prior to the date of the scheduled hearing. The event appraisal will testify a comment, the appraisal shall suffice to meet the requirements of paragraph. 5 days is what they require to bring an expert report in. They can then have a continuous and take as much time as they want to evaluate that appraiser's report. After the hearing, and they have the authority to require additional information. So there are all rules to this information to be supplied 5 days before the hearing or after the hearing. The timing of the question on the timing, there's no question the motion to dismiss was filed first, the brief in opposition to the motion was filed second, and then the motion for a continuance was filed and granted. So the Board of Revision was fully aware of the position of the school district and the county auditor at the time.
Mr. Webb, did you follow my hypothetical to the prosecutor? If in fact this is jurisdictional, if you got to the end of the merits of the matter and that resulted in increase in the value, would you then be in the position of arguing that that increase was not effective because the board never had jurisdiction?
No, I'll tell you why. The Johnson Walton Steel case that this court 69 Ohio State Second, 320 Northeast Second, 658. That's the case I was about to test the president's question. Where this court said that there's a duty to have a prosecutor. The prosecutor's not responsible to go out and convict people. The prosecutor has to produce a sculpture of they find that the value is lower than even the taxpayers for sale.
But if they don't have jurisdiction, how can they do it?
They did have jurisdiction.
Okay.
We did put them out. At least $50,000.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Weaver.
Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.